Almighty gracious Father Yahweh, how great and wonderful you are. Hallowed be your name. Your will be done. We thank and praise you for this past week, for the love, kindness, and mercy that you continuously show upon us. We're thankful that you've allowed us to see the truth of your word. And we ask that you continue to be with, lead, and guide us. Help us to better understand the scriptures and grow in your wisdom and knowledge. We thank and praise you for the strength and health that you blessed us with, and we ask that you be with those that are on the prayer request list. Father, they know you. They have their names put there because they have faith and believe in you. You know them. You know their needs. We ask that your will be done in your son Yahshua's name, that you'll touch these. We thank and praise you for all these things. Help us to learn and grow in your word. Help us to learn something from what you're presenting before us in this message today, that we can apply it to our lives, that we can assist, and we can live a light as an example to you, and that we can serve you. We thank you and praise you in all these things, and we ask them in your son Yahshua's name we pray. Hallelujah. Shabbat shalom, everyone. And I'll use a southern phrase right quick. And for those out there, Shabbat shalom out in the airways, and y'all come on over to Holt Summit to be in worshiping live, because I want to first of all thank everyone for the hospitality here. It's definitely is for this moment now second home to be able to come, and for the hospitality and the love that you see. So come over and worship live and worship and serve the Almighty Yahweh. Today we're going to ask a question. I'm asking the question, are we diligent? Are we diligent? The young people, I'm putting a little challenge to you here with a couple of the creatures on the screen. Be thinking about who and what you think these might be. And I'll learn this new clicker here. Let's start off by James 1, verses 22 through 25. Reads, "But be ye doers of the word, and not hearers only, deceiving your own selves. For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he is like unto a man beholding his natural face in a glass. For he beholdeth himself and goeth his way, and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was. But whoso looketh into the perfect law of liberty and continueth therein, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed." So here it is showing us to be doers of the word, and not only hearers. Let's go to 2 Peter 3, verses 12 through 14. It says, "Looking for and hasting unto the coming of the day of Yahweh, wherein the heavens being on fire shall be dissolved, and the elements shall melt with fervent heat," looking to the future. "Nevertheless, we, according to his promise, look for new heavens and a new earth, wherein dwelleth righteousness. Wherefore, beloved, seeing that ye look for such things, be diligent that ye may be found of him in peace, without spot, and blameless." Now the question is, are we diligent? We'll define diligence later and look at things. I want to lay a foundation to start with. Are we diligent? Are we diligent in all that we do? And all that we do is in our family, in our work, in anything that we do, especially in serving Yahweh and obeying Him. Yahweh is looking for those that are hearers and do the work. They are hearers and doers. They're looking for those that are diligent. Those that are diligent, you don't have to have great intellect or talent or resources. You just have to be obedient to Yahweh's word and be willing to serve Yahweh and follow the scriptures and his way that he set forth. But there is a slight problem that we can run into in serving Yahweh and obedience to Yahweh. And it's a problem that is, it doesn't have to do with an outright rebellion against Yahweh's word. It sneaks in softly. It's titled as slothfulness, or kind of, I hate to use the word lackadaisical, but just easiness, taking it easy. Slothfulness is crippling because it sneaks in. It's a lot of times it sneaks in unexpectedly. A slothful individual will hear Yahweh's word and then walk away. He'll be a hearer and not a doer, like we've seen in James chapter 1, just above. A slothful individual does not seek Yahweh with their whole heart, does not diligently examine their whole life, does not apply Yahweh's word to their life, maybe does not witness or share the truth of Yahweh's word with others, with their family, friends, co-workers, strangers, or such forth. So let's take a look at Yahweh's word and see what he says about slothfulness first, about how to recognize it, how to conquer it in our life, in our work, in our families, and serving Yahweh especially is what we're looking at. So a slothful individual, an individual does not believe that they are slothful. They do not realize this. It's something that sneaks up. They do not recognize that that they are this way. They will give excuses. Now, first of all, I'm going to say right here that this is not pointing the finger at anybody. This is all us taking a look at our lives to be sure that we're diligent servants to our Heavenly Father. They will give excuses, like they would be more willing to work if there wasn't so many obstacles in the way. That they're waiting for more favorable conditions to do the things they need to do. They state reasons why they cannot begin to work which needs to be done, such as there's an easier way to do it. I'm not doing this or applying my effort here because of unnecessary labor. Or they're quick to explain that why he is not making an effort. He gives excuses. Proverbs 26:16 kind of gives a focus in that. It says, the sluggard is wiser in his own conceit than seven men that can render a reason. So the slothful person gives himself, maybe they feel as though they give others, but he gives himself an excuse. So also a slothful individual makes easy self-choices in life. Slothfulness is a slow process. It sneaks up by making little compromises daily or often. Compromises seem harmless. Example would be in physically is a, this may hit home to some, staying in bed just a little longer, taking a little more rest during the day, waiting a little longer to start a project, procrastination. And I've known some that have been that way. And that's outside the faith, is with co-workers. Spending a little extra time in friendly talk, idle chatter, especially in the workplace, where they're not effective in their work and what they get done. Be turning to Proverbs 6, verse 10 and 11. Proverbs 6, 10, verse 11 says, yet a little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. So shall thy poverty come as one that travaileth, and thy want as an armed man. You know, it says right there, a little extra sleep, a little slumber. It says that poverty comes. A few soft, easy choices can become a daily routine. We have to constantly work at that not being a daily routine. Proverbs 20, verse 4. In Proverbs 20, verse 4, a lot of the scriptures we'll reference today will be in the Proverbs, the Book of Wisdom. Proverbs 20, verse 4, the sluggard will not plow by reason of the cold, therefore shall he beg and harvest and have done nothing. There stating, if you know about agriculture and about how you have to prepare and plan, you plant your field and you have to have your harvest. A slothful person, a sluggard that does not follow these procedures, they will have not want. You know, at the beginning of this country, in the frontier times, a man and his family survived by what they produced. They had to grow crops. They had to have a few animals, as we can see reflective also in the scriptures in the old times with the children of Israel. As it was a time they survived off the land. They didn't have the grocery stores that you can run to today if you have the money to buy the groceries. They relied on them planting and growing and harvesting. Eventually, these choices become a daily routine, which becomes a habit, essentially a bad habit. A habit becomes a routine a habit of life, every day, day in and day out, a habit for life. Proverbs 19:15, back up there a little bit, says, "Slothfulness casteth into a deep sleep, and an idle soul shall suffer hunger." So there it says it right there in the scriptures, that the idle soul that does not work can suffer hunger. So now, a slothful individual does not value importance of time or seasons. And we reflected on that just a little bit in talking about the planting and the harvest of the agriculture. But a sluggard, in reference here, a sluggard is not a self-starter. They have to be motivated by an outside source. They have to have someone. I don't know if you've known coworkers. It's like, the boss is always behind me. The boss is always suggesting things. They don't have the initiative to take things into their hands and to move forward without them being nudged. A sluggard sees one day as good as another. My father, my father-in-law, and their fathers and forefathers, there was always a phrase that they always heard a mention many a time, don't put off until tomorrow what you can do today. In other words, do your work, do it diligently, get it done, and don't procrastinate. A sluggard does not understand the value of time, does not understand control of seasons. We've just briefly spoke of that, about there's a time for planting, and there's a time for harvest. Basic philosophy of a sluggard is subconscious, that not knowingly knowing it, is to live for the moment and let the future take care of itself. A sluggard does not realize that they have to give an account to Yahweh for their time, for what has been given them. You know, you're given life through the Heavenly Father. A sluggard sees night as a season for sleep. Well, yeah, most of us sleep at night. But the difference is they see it as an excuse to sleep. And sleep comes to us as a regeneration by Yahweh, a regeneration to re-energize. Have you ever gone to bed so exhausted and so tired, but you get up the next morning and feel refreshed and ready to face another day? The purpose for sleep in Yahweh. They see that sleep, the sluggard does, as something that's needed, whether they've earned it or not. A sluggard feels that winter is an intrusion on their life and not a time to enjoy the fruit of their labor. They do not understand the function of, we're going back to agrarian society, they do not understand the function of the process of life. Even you can apply it today, getting up, going to work, working your hours, earning your income, which provides money, which provides for you to provide for your family through food and shelter and clothing that has been blessed above all from the Heavenly Father, Almighty Yahweh. A sluggard, they lose their freedom to make their own choices because they become a slave to the diligent. Now, to put this in better terms, is a lot of times the slugger is having to work for someone else that is diligent. You have employees and you have employers, and there's nothing wrong with being an employee. But there are some situations, what happens is a lot of times the sluggard complains about his position, maybe in dreams of wanting to be in business himself one day, but he doesn't have the initiative or the fortitude or the stamina or the foresight to become that himself. So now, before I actually clicked it a little bit early, if you look at Proverbs 12:24, before we switch, Proverbs 12:24 reads, "The hand of the diligent shall not bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute." There's your scripture that says about the slothful being under the hand of the diligent. And now, a sluggard will not finish tasks. A slothful A slothful person is lethargic in everything. Lethargic is defined as, I love the way encyclopedia or dictionaries start off with definition. If you look up lethargic, it says affecting or producing lethargy or lethargy. Okay, so now let's go to lethargy. Lethargy is a lack of energy or vigor, sluggishness, a lack of interest or enthusiasm. It's a state of being drowsy and dull or listless. Now, I'll give you an example that we can get a hint on that at some times. Has there been a time that you've been home, especially, I guess, on the weekend, and you just didn't feel your best, you didn't put your clothes on, you kept your pajamas on, and you sat around, and it just seemed like so tired, so sluggish. I have done that before, and then I go get dressed, start moving around, and I'm like, oh, man, I feel my energy now. It just seems it breeds, it circles within itself. Okay, a slothful person, each job becomes a problem. It's a mountain. Instead of they looking at it as a door of opportunity, it's a problem. A slothful person does not recognize the value of success. Success to them means more work. So they're successful, something to do, that means I got to do more. A slothful person lets opportunities slip by and leaves jobs unfinished. And also a slothful person, maintenance of what they have becomes a burden to them. Be turning to Proverbs 12:27. It says this last one here, maintenance of what they have becomes a burden to them. They find it troublesome to even repair or keep in repair the things they have. Proverbs 12:27 says, the slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. Also, Proverbs 24:30-31 speaks it. I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over with thorns, and nettles had covered the face thereof, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. The slothful person does not take care of what he has. A slothful individual lives in a world of wishful thinking. A sluggard, when he's not sleeping, desires to have things, to do things, to want things, but they don't have them because they don't have. Especially in this day and time, the monetary means to get the things that they desire to have. But there's one secret there is we have all stages of financial needs in this life, but the slothful individual lacks the ability to want to work to get those things. A sluggard has tension between restlessness and his inactivity, which produces frustrations which lead back to slothfulness. It's a circle that keeps going in on itself. It keeps circling around and around. Proverbs 21, verses 25 through 26 reads, Proverbs 21:25-26. The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor. He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not. These destructive frustrations produces, like I've said, more sluggishness, more slothfulness. It becomes a vicious circle that they feed on their self. They don't do, they're frustrated, they continue not to do, and they continue to be frustrated. Proverbs 19:24. A slothful man hideth his hand in his bosom and will not so much as bring it to his mouth again. Proverbs 26:14. Give you exercise in Proverbs. As the door turneth upon his hinges, so doth the slothful upon his bed. We'll make note. Think about this, about the sleep. I'll make note of it again here in a little bit. Okay, a slothful individual brings pain, damage to family, friends, and employers. A slothful employee, it can be unproductive, can be destructive. Their presence on the job can be as bad as their not being there at all. I've known some individuals this way, and they worry for their job. A slothful employee has a lack of initiative and follow through. It can be costly to who depends on him, the employer, or if it's the family that depends on him for providing. Proverbs 18:9. Proverbs 18:9 reads, "He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster." So if you're slothful in your work, you're being wasteful. An employer may adapt by transferring this individual to a different department or to a different job that has less productivity or a less responsible position. But what happens is this damages the self-esteem of the slothful, and then they start countering by giving excuses, just constantly excuses for the reason why, just like we read in the beginning of why they can't do something. Proverbs 10, verse 26 reads, "As vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him." It can be a problem, a pain. A slothful individual becomes the victim of self-induced fears. Slothfulness creates fear and in turn generates more slothfulness, like the circle we were talking about. A slothful person knows that they need a source of food, income. They're forced to try to, through effort, provide that, but a lot of times a slothful person, they will not resort to stealing, but I have to be careful with this one too. I'm not pointing fingers, and I'm not suggesting anything here, but they'll lead to beg, and I'm not talking about when a person that has a need. These are people that are constant, that are consistently, well, a good example is some of the people that are on the streets. Some of them have made a profession. Some of the brothers and I have talked about that. They've made a profession out of begging. The lack of food or income is the result of the easy choices and the fears that the slothful person has led into by his choices. Proverbs 22:13. "The slothful man saith, there is a lion without, I shall be slain in the streets." Give an excuse not to make an effort, not to go out. They will have a tendency to escape their fears by what? More sleep. More reserve, holding themselves in. Proverbs 15:19. Proverbs 15:19 says, "The way of the slothful man is a hedge of thorns, but the way of the righteous is made plain." Okay, we've been talking about slothful, so now let's take a look at a sloth. It's one picture that was in the beginning, and look at the complacent look on the one to your right, just so happy and peaceful. Hebrew word for sloth is astuluth, which means to be idle. Now this is one of Yahweh's creatures that he has created. Hebrew word for sluggard, which we read in some of the scriptures in Proverbs, is the Hebrew word H6102, ostale or ostal, if I butcher the pronunciation, which means sluggish or lazy. So some of the pictures of the sloth, of what they look like. Now here's a little bit about the information of a sloth. They can spend their entire lifetime in one tree. Can you imagine being that still? That'd drive me crazy. They live like that complacent look in their face. They live like they got all the time in the world. They are the slowest of all mammals. Sometimes in 60 seconds, they may cover only just a few feet. Now, if you think about that in walking, you know, we can average a 3-mile-an-hour walk. That's a pretty good pace. But to move a few feet in only 60 seconds, pretty slow. A sloth sleeps 15 hours a day. They sleep more than they are awake. And because that they move so slow, moths make homes in their hair and live in their hair. Because they move so slow that there are several species of algae that grows in their hair. And this algae becomes thick enough. If you look at some of these pictures, especially that middle one, they look green. That's because that's algae growing on that sloth from moving so slow. And what is it to the sloth? He completely ignores the moss and the algae. It's too much. He's too idle to clean himself. The primary occupation or the purpose of a sloth is to eat. The only reason to move, for a sloth to move, is to eat. They will they'll expend their energy to find food, to be able to reach their food. 99% of a sloth's life is spent hanging upside down by its legs. So the one you see there in the middle, top middle, and basically the center, that's 99% of their life. They live like that. That's the correct perspective to the sloth, is upside down. They can turn their head at 180 degrees. What's the importance of that? Well, they don't have to move. They just turn their head. If food becomes scarce, an example like drought, fire, insect infestation that eats up the foliage, the sloth will grow hungry, and not being used to hunting for their food, being used to it being just in reach or barely moving just a little bit to get their food, they can die of starvation. If the food does not stay within its grasp. Now, can you see how lethargic or how lazy this animal is? Primary defense to predators. Now, this is very interesting in a way. They move so slow, their primary defense in predators is to just be still, motionless. They can be motionless for hours. And what happens is, to the predator, it looks like a dead patch of leaves in the tree. And they just totally don't catch sight of him. And this one I'll have to try to explain. Some might know. Body temperature can vary more than 25 degrees. But the sloth will only curl up and prevent the loss of body heat. Your cold-blooded mammals or animals, and your snakes and your lizards and all that, when the temperature drops, they have to hibernate because their core temperature goes down and they cannot function or operate. This tells me 25 degrees, their body temperature can fluctuate. They have the ability to be able to adapt to weather change. They just refuse to. They would rather sleep. They would rather be still. So, how does slothfulness develop? Here we go. Proverbs in the Book of Wisdom. We have Proverbs 21, 25 through 26, which states that one who refuses to labor coveteth greedily. I was deciding whether to go to that, but we will. Proverbs 21, verses 25, 26 says, "The desire of the slothful killeth him, for his hands refuse to labor," which we read. "He coveteth greedily all the day long, but the righteous giveth and spareth not." Also, Proverbs 18, 9. Reads, "He also that is slothful in his work is brother to him that is a great waster," which we've seen that in the description of a slothful person. Proverbs 28, 22. "He that hasteth to be rich hath an evil eye, and considereth not that poverty shall come upon him." And this is kind of more of a desire of what a slothful person does. Proverbs 22:16. Proverbs
Proverbs 22:16 says, "He that oppresseth the poor to increase his riches, and he that giveth to the rich shall surely come to want."
Now this is what happens. This is also speaking of what one that oppresses maybe even a slothful person, that would be of the poor. Proverbs 12:24. Proverbs 12:24 says, "The hand of the diligent shall bear rule, but the slothful shall be under tribute." We read that, and also where the slothful is under the hands of the diligent. And then last, we're out of Proverbs, Genesis 3:19. This is kind of the declaration that Yahweh gave to Adam and Eve, that, or actually to Adam, that he would have to work by the sweat of his brow, or by the sweat of his face, in order to have bread. We can turn to that right quick. Genesis 3. Verse 19. "In the sweat of thy face shalt thou eat bread, till thou return into the ground. For out of it wast thou taken, for dust thou art, and to dust shalt thou return." You know, it didn't give a time frame. It said in their entire life. So, now turn to Proverbs 6:6-8. We took a look at a sloth, a slothful, a sluggard, the animal, the sloth. What does Proverbs 6:6-8 tell us? It says, "Go to the ant, thou sluggard, consider her ways and be wise, which have no guile, overseer or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest." Well, just in that little description right there, it says the ant's doing totally the opposite of what the sluggard or the sloth does. So now, the ant. In the ant kingdom, there's no superiors or chiefs or officers. A lot of people say, well, there's the queen. The queen ant is the center of attention, is the mother of most of the ants in the colony. But she is not the chief ruler. They are what's called servant leaders. The servant leaders are older ants that initiate work by setting an example. They start the work and do the work. The younger ants learn by imitating the servant leaders. Worker ants, they go and search for food. And as they go to search for food, they leave a trail of tiny drops of scent that is common to that colony. It's like leaving breadcrumbs. They go out so that all the others will follow. And they go to find the food, locate food, and then return to the nest. An important note about this also is this is how Yahweh has instilled in these little creatures that they will not cross their own scent path, because if they do, other ants will get confused and they may turn and go and follow in circle and circle, and they will follow in circles until they die from exhaustion. And by the way, there are no poor ants. They all share, all ants share their food, and all ants share their food equally. They're not misers or whatever. All right, there's a type of harvester ant. And a harvester ant actually harvests grain. They store grain underground in a granary. If water gets into that for some reason, heavy rains or whatever, now, this is telling you about the diligence and the work of the ant. They will take every grain out into the open air and let the sun dry it. Then they will take it back into the nest, into a new storage facility to where they can keep it dry. They're preserving their well-being, their welfare. This is their food that they survive on. Some ants are like dairy farmers. They maintain herds of aphids. An aphid is an insect that secretes a sweet, sticky substance that's called honeydew. And honeydew is greatly prized by the ants for food. Certain of these worker ants, they will act like cow herders, so to speak. They'll look after these aphids. They protect them. They'll move them from plant to plant. And in the fall, the worker ants will take the eggs and take them into the colony, and they'll watch over and protect the eggs. And then and guard them over the winter. And then when spring comes, they'll bring the newly hatched aphids out and put them on plants so that they can collect the honeydew. And then there's a few of the worker ants that become milk tanks, as it's, quote, milk tanks. They gorge on this honeydew until they become so large they cannot move. They'll hang themselves from the wall, the ceiling of a part of the ant colony inside the ground. And they're storage tanks. And until the colony needs that honeydew, then they're pumped dry in order to feed the colony. Some ants also, they like they're fungus farmers. They'll gather leaves and grass, which they chew up into a moist mash, and they make a compost, and it's stored in fields deep in the earth and within their nest area. See, some people don't realize that you see a little ant hill, but how great the city of the ants is below the ground. This mash is stored in these fields deep inside the nest. The fungus that grows from this mash, this compost, is harvested for food. Some of these fields of mash or compost, I try to imagine this, have been measured at over 100 square meters. That's quite a bit, coverage underground. Proverbs 30, verses 24 and 25 says, Proverbs 30, verse 24 says, there be four things which are upon a little upon the earth, but they are exceeding wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. I didn't have time to check that out because I have a contradiction to speak about strong here. I'm thinking that that might mean not great, like in size or whatever. But the ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. Let's take a little closer look at the ant. An ant is little. The largest of queen ants is about not more than 2 inches in length. And the pharaoh ant is the size of the dot on an eye. It's very small. An ant's appearance is very important. Those worker ants, when they come back to the nest, the younger ants lick them from head to toe to clean them before they go into the nest. It's like a drive-through car wash. As they come in, they clean them from head to toe. And it's one important thing is their antenna. If their antenna does not get cleaned well enough, then they lose the use of their sensory organs of how they travel and how they sense. An ant's eyes is not eyes like we have. They're compound eyes. They are eyes that have hundreds of fixed eyelids. And each is a non-focusing lens that has light receivers. The ant sees in a mosaic. Where we see an entire picture, an ant sees hundreds of little pictures. And their eyes are polarized like sunglasses. They let only certain angles of light in. So by that, they being polarized, they're able to determine what position the sun is at any given time during the day. They use the sun's position for navigation, just like the sailors did with ships at night with the stars. Ants will walk in the direction where they keep the sun in the same position, so therefore they can walk in a straight line. Hence, an ant's hearing, well, they have no ears. They hear by sensing vibrations through the ground, through their feet, their antenna, and the tiny hairs that cover their body and their feet. And when they hear these vibrations, here's the thing about the ant. They get excited. They hear others working, they get excited, they work even harder. So when they hear the others, they work harder. And when those hear those work harder, when they hear the vibrations, it just instills a diligent work amongst them all. Now, ant strength. A leaf-cutting ant can carry up to 50 times its own weight for over 100 yards. Okay, what does that mean? Let's convert that to human. Human conversion is that's a 200-pound man carrying 5 tons, that's 10,000 pounds, for 17 miles. Quite strong an ant is in their size and perspective. An ant's distance. An ant can make as many as 4 round trips a day up to 400 feet away from the nest. Comparison by man, that's a man walking 68 miles in a day. I walked a 20-mile marathon, and I was ready to be through with 20 miles. Ants' longevity. This is something I learned. I didn't quite know this. Ants live and work for years. A worker ant is considered to be old when they're 5 or 6 years old. I did not realize they lived to be such age. That's when they become those servant leaders I mentioned, and they set the example for the rest of the working ants. An ant's effect is affected by temperature, like I was telling the sloth's degree. So in the fall, when the nest is cooler, the ants are weaker and unable to provide for themselves. They slow down. So what they do is, the diligence of the ants is they through the warmer months, they provide and store up food so that when then they hibernate in the winter, so that when spring comes, they can start being active before they can actually go out and get food. They survive on the food that they have stored. Now, as a sidestep for just a moment, there's a type of ant called a driver ant. This is just for information's sake. It's also called a safari ant or an army ant. And they are located in Central and East Africa, and they extend to the tropical Asia. They are an ant that they travel in colonies. If you look on the lower center and the lower right hand, that's a colony of ants that is traveling. Okay, and what they do is, when they travel like this, sometimes it takes 2 weeks for the entire colony to pass by an area, vast in number. They sometimes there's as much as 20 million individuals within a nest. And seasonally, when food runs low and they travel, like these pictures show right here, they can march in columns up to 50 million ants. Now, years ago, I watched a special about driver ants. It's very interesting. There was where a path was. They put a camera for time lapse to follow. There was a lion that walked up in this colony, like you see in these bottom two pictures. He walked up within a few feet of it, looked at it, turned around, and went back the way he came. They said that he could have stepped across it, but he did not cross that path of driver ants, the army ants. Then also in that time lapse, it showed where hippopotamus did cross it. And within 8 hours, there was nothing but bones left. They consumed every bit. That's how vicious the army ant can be. Now, speaking of ants, some have heard me talk about fire ants. Little bitty ant. Well, this is what it looks like. And a lot of people say, oh, it's the big red ant. No, they're actually like that top left picture. The front part is partially red and the back part is black. Or, well, even the picture on the right shows the same. The bottom two pictures show that the ant doesn't bite. It stings and actually injects a toxic poison into the victim that is stinging. And if those bottom two pictures shows that where the ant is stinging. So, these fire ant colonies, which have great experience with them down in Georgia, they make large mounds out in the open. You don't see them in the woods or nothing. They're out in the open. I was going to take a picture, I didn't get around to it, of a pasture that you could look out across the pasture, and there was just hundreds of these mounds. A pasture that's not tended to, like they just leave this pasture, they leave cows and some donkeys in, but they don't bush hog it or they don't plow it. So these anthills show up everywhere. But if you're bush and hogging or you're plowing or whatever, it kind of tends to spread them out to where they don't build up like that. But they will attack small animals. And if they're, just like the army ant, if they're sedentary or if they can't move or they can't move fast, they will take them down. They will kill and consume what they get a hold of. Even the fire ants will do that. Now, speaking of fire ants, this is a mound on my brother's property. I took this so that you could kind of get a relation. Now, not speaking of whose foot this is a size 11 shoe, but this is perspective to this ant. This is an average fire ant hill. And when you're working, you have to watch, because if you step on the edge of that hill, they come out in voracious numbers, and they'll cover your foot in a minute. And before you know it, you're getting, can get hundreds of stains. To give you an example, my little grandchild got in one, and our best defense was it was summertime, thank goodness. We stripped his clothes off except for his undergarments, and we took a water hose, and we just had to douse him to get them off of him. And he had hundreds of bites. They act fast. And I was telling Alan that a sting, you get stung, the sting doesn't burn for a few minutes. 24 hours later, it still burns. It still burns. And so you imagine multiple stings like that. So here's another. After the Feast of Tabernacles this past year, when I got home, it was time to mow the lawn. Now, in comparison to the mow deck, you'll see in the grass that fire ant hill to show you the size of it. And that ant hill was created while we were at Feast of Tabernacles. And what happens is, I just mow right over them. And what they do, the next day, they have already capped it over. That's how diligent they work. Constantly. So there, speaking of ants, knowing the ways of an ant and knowing the ways of a sloth, Yahweh wants us to be diligent and not slothful. And how can we conquer slothfulness in our lives? We can conquer slothfulness by hunger. Yahweh's primary cure for slothfulness is hunger. We've seen that in the scriptures. 2 Thessalonians 3:10 says, "For even when we were with you, this we commanded you, that if any would not work, neither should he eat." Yahweh established a requirement on mankind after Adam and Eve. We've seen that in Genesis 3:19, that we're to work by the sweat of our face. And for those that choose to fast for sacrifice, just a note, Matthew 6:16-18 is a guideline for concerning fasting. But also, to conquer slothfulness is diligence. Learn the principles of diligence. That's in Proverbs 6:6 about learn the ant and her ways. All ants, the ants illustrate characteristics that are lacking in the sloth. They show initiative, self-direction, respect for seasons, ability to finish jobs, foresight necessary for planning for the future. Recognize that slothfulness develops in stages. Anyone can become a victim of slothfulness, and it begins unnoticed and it sneaks up on you. There's a type of latent slothfulness, which is the inward tendency to reject Yahweh's requirements. And that goes back to Genesis 3:19, where they just do not work. You got initial slothfulness, where you select soft choices in life, easy going, try to do things the easy, simple way. This type of slothfulness requires accountability to others. Then there's a disabling slothfulness. Allowing little surrenders each day, which will become a habitual way of life. That's something that we have to focus on. This requires going. This can require going without food, like if you choose to fast to keep the perspective in mind, or going without food because you haven't grown it or haven't earned the money to purchase it. But this will, in fasting, you can. A choice of fasting, you can clarify goals and reach objectives with Yahweh. To rise early. Discipline yourself to rise early is in Proverbs 6:9, where it speaks about slothfulness. It says, "How long will you sleep, O sluggard? Risk the temptation to get a little more sleep. Do not use the snooze button." And then, when you wake up, get up. Real quick, a friend of mine, when I was right out of high school, we worked at the same place. I spent the night down at his house. He was going to ride with me to work the next day. I woke up a few minutes before the alarm went off. When the alarm went off, I heard this great blunder in the other room. I jumped up and I said, "What is it?" And he goes, "Oh, I was turning off the alarm." What he has to do is his alarm is set across the bedroom from his bed. And virtually every day, because he'll hit the snooze button and go back to sleep, when he gets up, he gets tangled in the covers, trips over the covers, falls in the floor, and then he gets up to turn the alarm off. And so that's his process of waking up every day. Respect of time. Learn to respect time. Life is a race against time. We can win this race if we realize time is limited, death is certain, Yahweh's return is imminent, and maximum number of productive years is established only by Yahweh. Did you know that? Psalms 90 verse 10. Psalms 90 verse 10 says, "The days of our years are 70 years and 10. And if by reason of strength they be 80 years, yet is their strength labor and sorrow. For it is soon cut off and we fly away." So there's a time set forth there in Proverbs. Days must be counted. Our days must be accounted for. Psalm 90 verse 12 says, "So teach us to number our days that we may apply our hearts unto wisdom." Time requires accountability. Time has been entrusted to us from Yahweh for Yahweh's work. John 9:4 says, "I must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night cometh when no man can work." Remember, the sloth sleeps more than half of his day. He sleeps approximately 15 hours a day. Yahweh's warning on sleep is a proper amount of sleep is essential for good health. Now listen to this carefully. Yahweh's primary concern is not getting too little sleep. In the scriptures we've seen it's getting too much sleep. It has provided for us to recuperate from energy, but not to overindulge in it. We'll just mention these as we go. Slothfulness disables through sleep. You'll see that in Proverbs 19:15. Beware of loving sleep in Proverbs 20:13. Sleep that robs, Proverbs 24:33-34. The length of sleep is mentioned in Proverbs 6:9. Sleep that causes poverty in Proverbs 6:10-11. And sleep that causes shame, Proverbs 10:15. Remember, time is no respecter of persons. No one receives more hours in a day than another. Time is not recoverable. Every hour that is lost is gone forever. So, we being Yahweh's people should be diligent and not slothful in what we do. So, real quick, the definition of diligent is marked by persevering, painstaking effort. Careful and persevering in carrying out tasks or duties. Constant and earnest effort and application. Attentive and persistent in doing something. The key words here are persevering, painstaking, and persistent. A sluggard, the definition of a sluggard is a slothful person. An idler, a person who is habitually inactive or lazy. Did you hear that? Habitually inactive or lazy. Self-indulgent person who spends time avoiding work or other useful activities. One that is resistant to exertion or activity. And you notice it said in definition, a sluggard is a slothful person. So slothful definition is disinclined to work or exertion, lazy. Lazy, idle, inactive, indolent, a do-nothing. Resistant to exertion and activity. Now to look at scriptures for diligence. To be diligent, the scriptures has quite a few. We'll look at a couple of them right quick. Deuteronomy 4:9 reads, "Only take heed to thyself and keep thy soul diligent, lest thou forget the things which thine eyes have seen, and lest they depart from thy heart all the days of thy life. But teach them why thy sons and thy sons' sons." Deuteronomy 6:7 is part of the Shema, and it says, "Thou shalt teach them diligently unto thy children." That's His ways, Yahweh's ways. Deuteronomy 6:17
says, you shall be diligent in keeping the commandments of Yahweh. Proverbs 4:23 says, be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks. This is taking care of what you have. Keep the heart not with all diligence is 4:23. And then Proverbs 27:23 is be thou diligent to know the state of your flocks. And then Hebrews 6:10 is to work and to do and to show the same diligence in serving and keeping the promises or following after the promises of Yahweh. Hebrews 11:6 is a rewarder of them that diligently seek Him. Hebrews 12:15 says, looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of Elohim, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. 2 Peter 1:5 says, and beside this, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, and to virtue knowledge. And then 2 Peter 1:10, give diligence to make your calling and election sure. For if ye do these things, ye shall never fall. Look over those scriptures at home and time about how to be diligent. There's also the rewards for being diligent. Proverbs 10:4 says, the hand of the diligent maketh rich. Now, that not necessarily means monetarily. Rich in the faith, rich in serving our Heavenly Father. Rich with promises to come of the future. Proverbs 11:27 says, he that diligently seeketh good procureth favor. Proverbs 12:24, the hand of the diligent, we've seen this, the hand of the diligent shall bear rule. Proverbs 12:27, the slothful man roasteth not that which he took in hunting, but the substance of a diligent man is precious. We read that earlier under slothfulness. But the second part of it is the substance of a diligent man is precious. Proverbs 13:4, the soul of the sluggard desires and hath nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. And in Proverbs 22:29, seekest thou a man diligent in his business, he shall stand before kings, he shall not stand before men, mean men. So Yahshua told his disciples, said, go into all the nations. In Mark 16:14-16, in Matthew 28:19-20, he told his disciples to go into all the nations, go ahead of him. He sent the disciples ahead of himself to teach the evangel, to prepare the way, the good news. Is this also our commission as well to the world, is to tell the world of the evangel, of the good news? Let's take a look at, I jumped ahead there. Proverbs 22:29 a while ago is one that says he shall stand before kings. So let's take a look at Luke 10 verse 2. Therefore said he unto them, the harvest truly is great, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the owner of the harvest that he would send forth laborers into his harvest. Can we be those laborers here at YRM, each individual, Yahweh's restoration ministry? 1 Corinthians 9, for a closing passage. 1 Corinthians 9:23-27 reads, and this I do for the good news' sake, that I might be partaker thereof with you. Know ye not that they which run in a race run all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I not as one that beareth the air, but I keep under my body and bring it into subjection,
lest that I, that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway. So let's do the same. Let's go into all nations, preaching and teaching the evangel. That's being done right here, right now, with Yahweh's Restoration Ministry, when it goes out through the internet. This is what the ministry is doing. Let's do. Let's join in. Let's be diligent to help. Let's run this race. Let's run it together. Let's be diligent in all that we do, especially for serving Yahweh. Let us be diligent laborers for Yahweh so that we might hear one day in the future, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant," and may Yahweh bless. Hallelujah.